Colonel Burke, reel 17.
Without ceasing. And during that time we had no proper rations because the rations couldn't come to us. We were falling back on them. But in many cases, although we were told a certain map reference where we'd pick up our, the enemy attacked us, so we had to veer to the right or to the left, so we missed our rations. Mm. And then finally we did a counterattack at a place called Harbonnier and really drove them back. After which we were taken out of the line and back.
Just a question here. Did you find, after several years of trench warfare, in which very little movement had taken place whatsoever, this suddenness of the German attack and the effect of forcing upon you this unexpected degree of movement and mobility, did you find this difficult to take? I mean, were you sort of physically prepared for it,
oh,
or
yes,
psychologically?
Oh, yes, 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 because in, when you were in Brest at any period, you went on route marches, or you played football, you played games, and you got to remember, as I told you, say, in the Ypres sector, you walk up a trench 2,000 yards long with the equipment we carried, it kept your muscles fit enough. And you didn't know what it was. If you ever got any transport, which we are going to have for the first time, we get back, as I told you, from this place to a place called Plug Street. And there, after a few days, we were put into London buses. Well, they were the solid rubber-tired ones, you know, but marvellous. They had all the... Some of them still had the advertisements on them. Mm. Most of them were painted this dark olive green that we paint all our vehicles in it. And we were taken further back into rest. And we were then made up again, because we'd lost a lot of troops. And suddenly the Germans attacked on a new front on the Amiens sector, and we were sent up to for the defence of Amiens. Now, naturally, when you defend a town or a city, you don't defend the city itself by being there. You go out to suitable ground in front, and in this case, Villers-Bretonneux was about 4 miles in front of Amiens. And there we took up our positions and made good and got settled in and did our term of relief and came back to rest, and the Australians took over from us. But we hadn't been back in rest very long before we had to go and counterattack, because Villers-Bretonneux had been captured by the Germans from the Australians, who had found masses of champagne and I'm afraid were no fit condition to fight. So having regained Villers-Bretonneux, we were then relieved, and that was two attacks we'd made within a couple of weeks, and once again we were denuded of, well, you couldn't call ourselves a battalion, to practically company strength. So we were withdrawn and made up again with recruits, or not recruits, with troops from France. But although they'd been in France sometime, some of them, for nearly... since the beginning of the war, none of them had ever seen action because they were the Army Service Corps, who used to bring up rations as far as brigade headquarters, and then it was the infantry, you see, who had to bring it forward from brigade headquarters to the battalion. But these fellows had to be trained to be fighting soldiers then, you see. They'd had a soft life, and some of them had been the bakers in the bakeries down there, and all base duties, many of them, you see.
You were explaining about training these men.
Well, we had to train all these fellows, and the ones we got, it wasn't nearly sufficient. You've got to remember, there were 12 battalions in a division in those days, 4 in a brigade, and when they had all been, whatever battles we were in, the other 11 had been in as well. Therefore, they were all absolutely denuded of troops and hardly got any much of the company strength. So they all had to be put up. Well, suddenly we got the orders that we were going to a rest place where we'd be in trenches, but there'd be no fighting and that sort of thing, because we apparently had German tired and battered divisions opposite us. So down we go to a place between Soissons and Rennes. And we went in this train, which seemed to last for hours. It was only about 30 hours. And we arrived right down in the midst of the French army. And there we had lectures for about 3 days by many French generals and colonels, and that what life it had cost to take the Chemin de Dam, which was a high ridge between Soissons and Rennes, and that they hoped the gallant British wouldn't lose it. Well, in the meantime, we had more troops coming out from England. They were mostly brand new, with a few old soldiers which had been wounded. But what frightened me more than anything else was the age of them. They were nothing but boys. And at the time, I was the adjutant, and I hadn't got many real seasoned officers or NCOs left. So we had to make up from our own battalion, the fellows who had the experience, make them into the NCOs. We got officers, we got 9 officers from the ASC. Well, they were the fellows that had been playing around in the base all the war. They were utterly, as I thought, useless. Anyhow, we moulded these during this period of rest we had down there at a place called Roussy. Now, Roussy was a place where it was marvellous billets, because they were in caves. They were natural caves, and you went for miles and miles and miles inside them. They were fitted with electric light. There were beds. You were safe. You could sleep. You couldn't hear any noise or anything. That was okay. And then we had the colonel and I went up to the front line to have a look at it, and came back and told them they were going to have a wonderful time. The trenches were about 7 foot 6 deep, so no man could fire over them, so we had to cut a fire step. Their dugouts, you went down 20 steps, and there was a light railway running all in this system. You see, there was electric light. There were wire beds. We got into this place, and we were in the trenches for 8 days, during which we had 2 companies up, and we changed them over after 4 days and put the other companies up so they'd be able to have a study of the land, because you could put your head above ground, not too often, but you could, and have a look at the land. And the reserve company even had their field cookers up. They cooked by day in this wonderful country, you know.
So, did you find serving with and indeed under the French, did that give you any particular insights into the French army, how they did things?
No, we never saw any of the French army. No, never saw any of them. Okay. The only thing we did was we were supported by a few, very few, French light guns. Because our own artillery, when the attack came, hadn't arrived. And we did our first 8 days in the line, and we were supposed to be out for 8 days in reserve, during which times our troops mingled round the different villages. They were allowed off in the afternoon. And I think it was a Sunday that we suddenly got the message to take battle headquarters. Sunday morning. Well, we'd never seen battle headquarters. Well, I had to send runners out, officers, and they had to go on push bikes, because that's all you had. That was the only transport you had, unless you took a limbered wagon, but they were wanted. Into all the villages and recall the men, where the colonel and myself went up to look at these battle headquarters which we were going to take, see what they were like. Well, we came back about 6 o'clock. The troops had been paid because the cashier, I'd sent one of the officers off to the field cashier, you see. That's the way we draw money. So we paid the troops out. And then we started going up to the line, where we got in positions. And then the colonel and myself went round. Well, the forward positions, there was so much undergrowth, because you see, it was May, it was up about 4 feet. We had to get them to cut as much as they could to give themselves a field of fire, but they couldn't do much in, about an hour's daylight left. And that was the two front companies. But you've got to remember, we had two battalions in front of us. We had one, the Middlesex in support, and the West Yorks in the front line. Well, the colonel and myself went round these wretched places, I think, twice. We sent four headquarters runners back to brigade asking for information, telling them what we'd done, but we never saw them again. And then there was only one left, and that was Jordan. And that, well, he was the personal batman as well as a runner of the CO. And we sent him, first of all, round each of the companies. And he was a marvellous fellow. I don't know how he did it, but he got round all the companies and came back. And then he was sent off to brigade headquarters. Well, that was the last message we sent down. And the last message we got back, because he brought the message back about 10 minutes before, hell was let loose when the Germans opened with gas shells. And they flooded the place with gas shells for about half an hour. After which, then they sent over their heavy stuff, you see. And that was intermingled with shrapnel. And then suddenly, unfortunately, it was a misty morning, and out of this haze, right on top of you, appeared the Germans. As you thought, well, you started shooting like hell. But unfortunately, it turned out to be our gallant friends who had told us not to go back. It was the French fleeing in pyjamas and God knows what. I never saw such a rabble in my life. Shouting and gesticulating, everything was finished. Well, we went on fighting, and then the Germans came. But before they came, we had lots of Middlesex wounded back through us, you see. And they got over the river, over Pontevert bridge behind us, and then on to Roussy and got saved. Then no more came. Then the West Yorks, who were in support, started coming back, and they went through us. And we had the... Oh, we did get another message through, because our order was to stay put. Even if the Middlesex and West Yorks came back through us, we were to stay put till we... Well, as long as we could. We were not to retire. That's where we are. So we stayed where we were till the battle started at 4:50, and about 5 to 12, the RSM came to me that he couldn't locate any of the companies. And as far as we were concerned, we had about, there were 23 of us. We had 200 rounds, just about 200 rounds of ammunition left. So I said, right, they were coming on. I said, three men, go out and strip any of the dead they could find. We stripped them of their ammunition, and we held on till about 12:30, when finally the only ammunition left was 6 rounds in my revolver. But prior to that happening, there was a road running right up between, from Roussy, over the Pontevert Bridge, up to Jouvencourt Crossroads, and beyond Jouvencourt Crossroads was the village. Now, Jouvencourt Crossroads was in the enemy hands. Yes, I forgot to mention that the river running, bridge of Pontevert running over the river, was the River Aisne. Mm-hmm. Well, we then had, we went on firing a bit till all the ammunition was left, and we were on two sort of mounds, well, small hills, if you like, and we could see we shot and shot and shot. The fellows in the trenches could hardly hold their rifles. They've killed thousands. I've never seen so many dead in front of our trenches. We were shooting the artillery which were coming down because they didn't stop. They went through us. And suddenly I said, charge. And the 23, well, I was wounded in the legs, about 9 machine gun bullets up my legs. And they charged with the sergeant major. Well, we found out afterwards when we came home, I mean about 3 or 4 years after, that 23 men had charged against an average of nearly 10,000 Germans.